This episode of The Sod Show is dedicated to the memory of the late, great Marcus Harper. Enjoy. It's another Friday afternoon and you're tuned to another episode of The Sod Show. Very few people get to come into my home and sit in my kitchen. I think the last time I had this, it was Ian Price, and it was just before the build of his 2017 Chelsea Flower Show garden. But Barbara Segal, how are you?
I'm good, and likewise for me, it's just a real privilege to be here in your kitchen looking at your lovely garden.
Well, we skip past my garden. You're obviously in Dublin because you're in my kitchen, but what happened with The Voice? Were you doing karaoke, or were you giving out to somebody like myself?
I met with a lot of people who talked, and I talked too, and it's gone. But if it's too crackly, then I apologise. Well, I could go down a tone a bit lower, but I don't know. Is it okay?
I think it's okay, to be fair. Yeah, it's grand by me. It makes you sound a little bit more quintessentially British, almost like you are going to drink Darjeeling shortly after.
Well, so long as you don't think it's because I've been singing in a smoky, dark cafe or nightclub.
Barbara Segal, the Parisian jazz lounge singer. It's got a nice ring to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sod Show Garden Podcast.
Let's get into how you popped up on my radar. Francis Lincoln, who are the publishing house in London. I haven't done anything with them, I think, in about 4 or 5 years. So nice to hear from them again. And it was even better when a copy of your book came in the post. For those who are unaware, it is Secret Gardens of East Anglia, a private tour of 22 gardens. And we were talking over a bite to eat last night, and I was saying, number one, it's quite hard to find good gardening books. Number two, they're usually, or for the greater part, and if you're listening to this, as a, by the way, at Sod Show on Twitter, facebook.com/thesodshow and sodshow.com, I don't mean to generalise here, and I'm not having a go at any of the lovely books that do exist out there, but you know what I mean. There are some that are a little bit rehashed, and I'm a little bit more, I like the stories of, don't just tell me about the gardens. Give me a little bit of I tell you, I met this guy in Galway or Dublin or Cork or London, and he was there for 22 years. And I'm privileged and honoured as doing the Sod Show that I get to interview a lot of head gardeners. But it's not that usual to see people writing about them. What, how, and why?
Well, it's just such a lovely part of the country, East Anglia. It's 4 counties, Suffolk, Norfolk, Essex, and Cambridgeshire. And I went to live there and just loved it and got into gardening, got to meet some wonderful gardeners, and I just thought their stories and their gardens should be better known. And I met this really nice guy who you know, who is a great photographer, and we decided to work together on it. And that was a long time ago. It's taken a long time to write the book.
But you do agree with me, it's not the norm. And what you said there is not enough people tell their stories, which you've essentially done a written, extremely well, I should add, photographed version of what the Sod Show does, which is telling the lesser, sometimes lesser tales of horticulture and the wonderful people that we have. When you approached Francis Lincoln, I gather, and said to them, I have a cunning plan, I have a great idea, to quote Captain Blackadder, did they say, oh, Barbara, come on, seriously?
We'd been to a few other publishers as well, and they had said that, but Francis Lincoln fortunately said that would be very, very good, so let's go ahead. And we were thrilled. But you can get knockbacks, and it takes lots of conversations with people to get a book done, I think.
All right, well, let's go past the book then. For those who don't know, Barbara, you wear a few hats, most of which I am aware of. Start with you as an editor.
Well, I edit a magazine for the Herb Society, which is called Herbs, which is just about those wonderful plants that you can grow and put on your food and have a wonderful different flavours, and the people who grow them again. And then I edit a magazine called The Horticulturist, and that's why I happen to be in Dublin is that the Institute of Horticulture, or I should say the Chartered Institute of Horticulture, and I was thrilled that it gave me the opportunity to come and meet you.
There's always a bonus in there somewhere, isn't it? And I just happen to be it, says he, getting slightly big-headed. What are the other hats that you wear then?
I think that's about... Oh, I've got a blog. I blog myself, and it's called thegardenpost.com, I think.
You think? Is this your first book?
No, about 10 years in between this book and the previous, but it's about number 8.
So what were the other books based on, and does this differ greatly then in that department?
It does. The very first book was called The Holly and the Ivy, and it was a little Christmas gift book about those two plants and how they feature in our lives at Christmas time. And that was really fun because I made it so that it wasn't only the plants, but it was the people who were associated with the plants, growers of holly for the market, that sort of thing. And then I did a follow-up called The Christmas Tree, which was also a Christmas book. And then after that, a few on herbs and one or two on gardens. I've never really done anything on how to garden because I like other people talking about how they garden. So that's really been the basis. It's been talking to other people about their gardens always. And I love gardening myself. So I do garden, but I never would consider myself an expert. There's always somebody else who can teach me and show me what to do.
You're also involved with the Garden Media Guild, and you almost forgot, I didn't, and not in the same breath, but you're also involved with Perennial. For those who aren't aware, I'm a member of the Garden Media Guild, and my bottom has appeared in the Perennial calendar. There are also former guests of the show, I should add, and the calendar, as we just discussed, was photographed by Jonathan Ward, another former guest of the show, at RHS Wisley, whose curator is Matthew Potage, who's also a former guest of the show. How and what do you do with the Garden Media Guild and Perennial?
With the Garden Media Guild, I was on the committee for a long time, and I used to edit their magazine called GMG News. But when I came off the committee, I gave up doing that, which was a pity because I really loved it. It was the nicest form of nosiness to be getting to know, like you do, all sorts of interesting things about people, their jobs, what they do, who they are, all of that. But now I'm just a reader of the magazine, and I love the Garden Media Guild. It's a really good place to meet lots of interesting colleagues who write or broadcast, take pictures. And I just hope it goes from strength to strength. And Perennial is a wonderful charity that is aimed at people who work in horticulture, who might fall on hard times through injury or job losses, all sorts of reasons. And it really helps people get back on their feet again, doesn't it? And what you did, even though I'm blushing at the thought of your bear behind. I think bearing all in a good cause is wonderful. But, you know, I should tell listeners that I'm sure there was a potted plant or two in place, or was it a watering can, or in your case?
We'll skew past my Irishman tan lines. Anyhow, no, I'm getting distracted myself and starting to blush. You strike me as somebody who doesn't sit still. If I was to write down all of those hats that you wear, am I right in that? Were you that kid that sat down the back of the class, that essentially me, where you had to be reminded to pay attention a lot?
Yeah, but my mother used to say I had a butterfly mind, never ever stayed on one subject, just flitted about. But that's what I think, that's what journalism's like in a way. You get new subjects all the time, and how do you ever learn enough about them? You have to keep flitting around. I think garden writing is perfect because there's always another garden, another plant, another garden designer to talk to. And that's the best form of crack, I think.
Back into the book, 22 gardens in total. I gather you visited every single one of them. For those who have not, who are living outside, who are living in Salt Lake City, or who are living in Dublin, or who are living in Manchester near Tatton, etc. I hear people saying, you know, why should people buy the book? I don't mean it in that breadth, but what's the crux in? Am I going to read this book and then want to go and see all these places and go looking for that head gardener because he's been in there? Or am I going to look at the gardens in a little bit of a different light? Can you give me a bit of an example on that?
Well, I think most of the gardens are open but not on a regular basis. So you would be able to go and visit them, which is good. They're all good gardens. And because it's such a lovely region, it's just worth visiting. And if people don't know where it is, it's on the bulge of England, that bit that sticks out into the North Sea. It's hard to get there sometimes because we don't have very straight roads going there. Our train service doesn't always run easily. So you have to really be determined to come to East Anglia. And I just wanted to say, when you do get there, if you love visiting gardens, there are at least 22 that are worth it. There are many, many more, but we couldn't get more in the book. We were only supposed to be doing 20, but we managed to squeeze two more past the publishers. They weren't looking, and we just pushed them in, hoping that nobody could count, but obviously they do, and there it says on the cover, 22. But they were all interesting because I think the people made them. You know, you can't get away from who makes the garden. So when you go to see them, the garden owners are likely to be there because they're proud of what they've done. So I'm sure it does add to anyone's visit that you can go and chat to people about things. So I just hope people will like it and will go and read the book and see the pictures and then think, I really want to see this garden in the flesh and go there.
There was a 17th century estate that I had designed and won some shiny things for to design and build of. And I remember, as in true Sideshow style, I hadn't planned to discuss this, so I have nothing prepared. But I remember that around they had brought in an Italian designer, I think it was Alessandro Galilei, and I think his name was Stephen Switzer from the UK. And essentially they ran broke. And so the garden build and design was left to the gardener, who didn't have, I guess, the regard or the name or what we would know as the garden designers that they wanted to employ but now couldn't afford to. And in all of the writings, what struck me was that his name was Nick. He wasn't referred to with a second name. He wasn't important enough, essentially, to be noted. You are kind of right that the head gardeners aren't usually the ones who get that kudos and pat on the back. It's usually the owners, understandably so, because they're obviously footing the bill. How was it getting access to all of these? Because you don't have 22 head gardeners' telephone numbers in your phone, or at least you didn't before you started this journey.
That's true. Some of the gardens do garden their own, but many of them, they just put me in touch with their gardeners, and they really, one in particular, a lovely garden called Columbine Hall in Suffolk. The head gardener there is called Kate Elliott, and she's been there since she was 16. And it's her garden as much as the owner's garden. And they told me how one part of the garden is a beautiful ornamental kitchen garden. And they said they don't pick anything unless Kate tells them they can. So you can see they have a really lovely relationship with her and she with them. And she is just one of the star people in the book. She took me round. I interviewed both of the owners and Kate. I think the dynamic in some gardens is that it's a combined enterprise and it doesn't feel that there's two levels. And that was really lovely in that particular garden. So in each of them, people just opened up and told me about their gardens. In another garden, one of the nicest things about, well, it's a lovely garden called Tinker's Green Farm, and that's in Essex. And the garden owner is a garden designer called Denny Sweet, and she's got a fabulous garden shed, which she's called Denny, and she calls it Den's Den. And she said her husband gave it to her for their 30th wedding anniversary. So, what, you know, where else in what other part of the world do you have people giving each other presents like that? You know, diamonds, rubies, no, a garden shed. So,
there are men, ladies, women all over the world listening to this saying, if I ever bought my significant other or mom even a shed, to quote my own mom, she'd box your bloody ears off for it.
Oh, but gardeners are different.
That's very true.
That was a really lovely place to go to, and that is open under the National Garden Scheme.
What do you do when you're not doing this, Barbara? And I ask this question because I, number one, find it very hard to sit still. And number two, I find it very hard to do anything, either by want or just by habit or just because that's just the way it invariably ends up. I find it extremely difficult to do something that is not of photosynthesis in some varying format. Are you on par with that, or do you have a thing, do you crochet, or for example?
No, I don't crochet. No, I love gardening, and I've got an allotment as well. People think I'm mad to have an allotment, but I love it. I like growing veg, herbs, and I love garden visiting. But there is something else I do for exercise, but I'm not sure I should reveal it, because I look around and I see no hula hoops, but I do hula hoop.
The only other person I knew who ever hula hooped was my mom. And this is going to sound really odd. So I'm one of eight children, and I came in and it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, Christmas Eve, heading into Christmas Day. And we were all back home and then everybody's had a few drinks. And mom's just standing in the living room, all seven and a bit stone of her, just under 5 foot tall, doing the hula hoop while my dad is pouring another can of Guinness and somebody's having a glass of wine and the music's playing in the background. She could do it for ages.
I can't do it for ages. About 1.5 minutes is my limit. But the best exercise is from picking the hoop up all the time.
I don't mean to stick on this, but how did you end up in that?
Well, I can't run. I'm not so keen on swimming. I love swimming in the sea, but not in a swimming pool. I sort of thought, well, I walk a lot for exercise, so I'll try something new. So I found that there's this wonderful kid nearby who teaches hula hoop, and she is amazing. I mean, she thinks that she's going to convert me into one of her troop, but there's no way I'm going there, so long as I can just do it round my hips and round my arms.
Okay, now I definitely don't mean to stick on this, but who teaches hula hoop as a class anyway? If you're listening to this, and I genuinely mean this, and you know anybody who teaches hula hoop, please send me a note. I don't know anybody in Ireland who teaches hula hoop. How did she get into that?
Well, she's just the most amazing young woman. I'll tell you her name. She's called Erin Cunningham, and her company's called Fireflow, and you Google her. And they go around, her little troop of friends. They're like a circus act, and they go around hen parties, weddings. I've just seen something on Facebook last night where three of them were at a wedding dressed but sort of like the Jedi. Two of her friends are stilt walkers, and you will have seen them at Chelsea.
Oh yeah,
dressed up in wonderful floral garb. It's Frankie, and I can't remember Frankie's partner who does the stilt walking with her. And this Erin has a class in Sudbury, in Colchester, and in Bury St. Edmunds. And I'm getting no fee for saying this, but I do think she's a most wonderful teacher.
Yeah, the Sod Show tends to deviate off the point a little bit every now and again, but that's allowed. I saw the stilt walkers at Tatton. I think they were outside the Bruntwood Experiment. Send me a note at Sod Show on Twitter, facebook.com/Sod Show, or just go to sodshow.com and stick in Tatton photos, and it'll come up and you'll see them standing outside this wonderful garden. You do head to the garden shows a bit as well, I therefore gather, same as myself. Do you go there as press media and report upon that, or do you just go there as press media because it gets you in the side door, if you understand me?
I do both. I mean, I feel really privileged to be part of the garden press and to be able to go to it. But I either write about it in The Horticulturist or on my blog now, and in Herbs magazine. I always check to see what herbs are showing and who the herb growers are. There used to be many more than there are, but you find there'll be a herb like bronze fennel, thyme, that is in every garden, and it's really great to see herbs getting center space like that. But no, it's a wonderful privilege to go on press day to the gardens. So this year I've been to Malvern First, Chelsea, and then to the RHS News Show, Chatsworth, which was on a very, very wet and windy day. But it was a good show.
I had Paul Hervey Brooks on. I have to get him back on because I saw the photographs going out of his garden build. A really interesting interview, I should say, is, by the way, and an absolute gentleman. But the last I remember was Sherry Carman, another former guest of the show. Sorry about this. I don't mean to be dropping the names. I know when she did her garden in Hampton Court Palace Flower Show for Perennial, coincidentally, I think it was about 3 metres they went down on a 10-metre by 10-metre garden. And of course, it was the wettest June, July, if I remember correctly, nearly on record, and the place filled up like a swimming pool. And she jokes about it, as you might do, you know, your worst holiday experience 20 years ago. It's nice to look back and giggle at it, but at the time it's a pain in the tush, essentially. Yeah, let's go fast track, speed dating, quick fire around. Your favorite food?
Pesto, basil in pasta.
Really?
Yeah. Why? It's just got a wonderful flavor. Basil, the herb, pine nuts, garlic made into a paste, And then served with any sort of pasta is just an amazing dish.
But pavlova is amazing.
Well, I like that too, but I was just answering very quickly.
Oh, sorry, okay. I didn't know.
I didn't know I could give two things. So there you go. Pavlova would be another choice.
Are you just saying pavlova? Because I said pavlova.
Absolutely, but because it's a very good choice. Oh, a really, really nice salad of veg that you've grown yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, and potatoes. Couldn't come to Ireland and not say potatoes.
That's very true. If you say it with an Irish accent, I'll give you a Brucey bonus. Your favourite garden that's in the book, are you allowed to do one of them?
I can hardly do that. No, somebody else would have said they're all my favourites.
The funniest moment whilst putting that book together.
Give me another question and I'll try and think of one.
Your favourite drink?
Oh, gin.
Wow, you had Guinness last night with me.
That was very good.
Yeah,
the Guinness last night was terrific in your local, well, one of your locals. But no, a gin and tonic is just like a perfect drink for me.
Your favourite piece of music?
Oh, anything from the Beatles.
Really? Yeah, are you one of them? Did you see the poster on the wall?
I did.
Yeah. No, I saw that. I just took it in and I thought, well, I won't mention it unless you mention it.
But you know, we're about three steps away from running away together.
I never thought you'd ask.
Well, I wasn't asking, but now that you mention it, yeah, I mean, it's all good.
See where this is going.
And you've seen my bottom.
No, not yet. I haven't bought the calendar yet.
One of the things that happened through the book, I'm hesitant to bring it up for a slight negative, but the passing of Marcus Harper, who did the photography for your book. Do you want to dwell on that for a little bit?
Yes, Marcus was a really great friend and he lived very close to me. In 2008, when I started thinking about the book, I asked him if he would like to work with me on it. So we worked for a long time on it and we had a lot of fun. You talked about what was the funny moments. We had a lot of fun getting the book together, driving to different places in the last 2 years. But he wasn't well, and he saw a copy of it. We each had one copy in early June. And, you know, we were both very proud of it. And sadly, he died in August, so he didn't see it to publication. We'd always thought we would do a double act where he would show his pictures as a slideshow and I would do the talking, or we'd both do the talking about the book. But I'm doing it all on my own. And I miss him very much. But I would just like to say that Marcus's pictures are exceptional. His pictures bring the gardens to life. And he is much missed by so many people. When we had decided which gardens were in the book, because we didn't want to approach people and say we'd like to put you in the book and then find we didn't, because that would have wasted their time. We only wanted to finally approach the people who were going to be in it. He went around taking pictures of the owners. We had to have portraits, and sometimes it was the owners with a gardener. Often the owner would say, could they have their dog in the picture? So we had all these lovely dogs. And on one occasion, when we sent the pictures to the owners to have a look to be sure they were happy with them, the one owner returned with a comment saying, the dog doesn't look so good in the picture. So we tried to see if we could find another picture of the dog. The designer at the publishing house said, is this a book about gardens? So that put us in our place, and that picture of the dog still stands. I think the dog looks good.
While we're on the subject, be honest about this, go down to your local bookshop and get them to order it in, or go down to your local bookstore and take a free leaf through, pretend you're going to buy the thing, and just look at the photography. It is absolutely majestic, and it's like a photograph that tells a little bit of a story in itself. You almost get lost a little bit in the moment. And anybody who has that ability to make art from one picture, I take a photograph, it's me and Barbara in it, it's just, that's all you can really see. But Marcus just had a knack for doing that so beautifully. I should add the Secret Gardens of East Anglia, a private tour of 22 gardens written by Barbara Segal. Hey, we had this conversation actually last night. Is it Segal as in Stephen Segal, or is it Segal?
Oh, I like the first way, Segal.
Well, now I'm unsure of the difference. Yeah, what's it? You say both variations because you say it slightly differently to me.
Yeah, when I was at school, it was just Segal, but I... But I like it as Segal, or as you pronounced it. I'm happy with anything. So long as it's spelled correctly, I'm happy however anyone pronounces it, so long as it isn't spelled as seagull like the bird.
Okay. The foreword is by Bet Chatto. Talk to me about that just briefly.
I suppose if I was to say who my garden heroes were, she would be one of them. And I met her many, many years ago when I first came to garden in the area. Still one of the foremost nurseries, but at one time it probably was about the only nursery. And Beth is in her 90s. I asked if she would be kind enough, because she knew Marcus as well, and would she write the foreword for us? And I just feel so, so pleased about that. Because her garden would have been in the book, but you could not have said that it was a secret garden, because everybody knows her garden.
Do you consider yourself to be a bit famous?
No, I'm just me, and I just love being in other people's gardens. You said earlier, so this is just you and what you do, and that's just me and what I do. Sometimes I pinch myself and I think, I've met all these lovely people. Aren't I lucky with my job? And I'm lucky that they are happy to talk to me as well and tell me what they do. So I don't think I'm the famous person they all are.
I think the conversation, if I remember it, was being asked about how come there's a list of names, which is apparently quite impressive as a back catalogue of the sod show. I think I was relaying this to you, and I was answering that I scratched my head. I repeatedly say, you know, who the flip, to put a polite word on it, but who the feck, to use a Father Ted word, is Peter Donegan. I'm a Joe Nobody. And when... and Andrew Wilson sends you a text in Chelsea Flower Show the day before he's about to win his first gold and says, you know, are you going to come up and talk to me? But it's not just Andrew. And I don't see them as Mark Bolan and T-Rex or Mick Jaggers or David Bowie's. Mm-hmm. I see them as just people with really kind hearts, which is the reason why we're sitting together. And so my answer to you was, I don't see them as a list of names. More, there's a common denominator between them, which is that they are all people who I would happily go for a pint of Guinness with. And once you're on that level, everything seems to change. Did you find that was the case when you were doing this book?
Yes, I mean, certainly with a lot of the garden owners, because they move in very different circles, some of them, to me. I suppose it's gardening and the fact that most of them do or did, because some of them are older now, but when they started their gardens, they were all digging and creating them in their minds, designing them. And I think it's that common thread that we all have with gardens. I just find that there's a great generosity of telling you about plants and where they got them from and what they like best. Just having a good conversation with somebody. That's just the best part of journalism for me, is having that conversation. I wouldn't like to be an investigative journalist talking about economics and...
Oh, God, no.
This is where I want to be. And I think what you do is great fun, to have people coming to see you, talking to you, you airing what you do about them. I think that's the most perfect form of good chat.
That's what it is, isn't it? People just waking up in the morning. And I'm not saying you've got to get up and have a bowl of Tony the Tiger cornflakes and start singing lines from Oklahoma.
We just did that.
Well, we actually did. Sorry, we did do that when we came in the door. That's it. We leave that for another day. But at the same token, isn't it nice just to sit down and, in this case, record it?
Yeah.
But for the greater part, to have a conversation and or to be able to retell that story where it makes others smile. And in this case, it's about horticulture and anything that photosynthesizes, that puts a smile on my, and in this case also your face. In a world gone mad, it is extremely beautiful.
I would hate a world that didn't have that. Now I'm sounding a bit preachy, aren't I?
Listen, it's all good. It's not preachy. You should go out and buy flowers for no apparent reason instead of just for Valentine's Day. Or, as I like to say, you should go out the back garden, let the grass grow a little bit longer and roll around in the daisies for no apparent reason. In the meantime, Secret Gardens of East Anglia, a private tour of 22 gardens, published by Francis Lincoln, is on sale as we speak. It is in all good bookstores, preferably, or available also for sale online. It is written by Barbara Segal and wonderful photography by Marcus Harper. Barbara, thank you so much.
Oh, it's been great for me, so thank you. Thank you.
Right, have a great weekend in the great outdoors, folks. We'll chat soon. Take care. Slán. Bye-bye. Ooh. And if you get a minute and you're in that iTunes provider thing, leave a rate and review and say Barbara was your favourite episode. All right? Take care. Slán.